written in chalk, the echo of Arthur Stace, explores the legend of the man who became Mr. Eternity and how that word ended up emblazoned across the Sydney Harbour Bridge at the turn of the millennium. This award-winning documentary is now available to watch in the free Vision app. Just tap the Watch tab and scroll to the Written in Chalk channel. If you don't have the Vision app on your phone or tablet, download it when you search Vision Christian Media in your app store. Or click the link at vision.org.au/app. Vision Watch. Vision Watch. Another way Vision is helping you look to God daily.
realfaith.org.au.
I'm currently going toe-to-toe with death, battling cancer, and it has had its challenges, but also its rewards. In many ways, cancer has rescued me from myself, and it means that it focuses you very much on the things that are truly important. And so things like ego and money just become absurd and irrelevant.
Welcome to Real Faith, conversations about the impact faith has on our lives and the challenges we go through, helping us today and giving us hope for tomorrow. That's real people, real life, and real faith with Eric Scatterbo.
Well, as we heard last time, Dr. Nick Hawkes has lived a rich and full life. He was born in Adelaide and went on to receive degrees in both science and theology. He's written several books defending the Christian faith and has also written several novels. His radio spots are heard on stations throughout Australia, and currently, I'm sad to say, he's in the fight of his life battling cancer. Last time, he shared his story about sailing in England and then also going to Hong Kong to do ministry with Jackie Pullinger, who's the author of the classic Christian book, Chasing the Dragon. So quite an eventful life. Welcome back to the program, Dr. Nick Hawkes.
It's great to be with you again, Eric.
And I should say that you're joining us once again from your home in Adelaide. And, well, you had quite the adventures that we heard about last time. We ended with you being in Hong Kong, and that was quite an experience, in the slums in Hong Kong. And that's kind of where you grew in your faith and really matured. Is that right?
That's right. That's where I encountered the empowering presence of God's Holy Spirit. Mm-hmm. I've never really understood God very much. I'd only been a Christian for 1 year.
Oh, wow.
And of course, you know, God is absolutely wonderful. And Christians understand that God lives in community within himself, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. But I never really understood the Holy Spirit. That the Holy Spirit was God's provision to all Christians to empower their ministry and teach and enable them. And that's what I discovered working with Jackie way back in 1972. And so that's where God took me and my twin brother to teach us that. And then we went back to England, and it was just as well that I had God's empowerment at that stage, because I went to Portsmouth Polytechnic to study biology, majoring in marine biology, thinking that I was going to be a research scientist for all my life. But very quickly, actually, became the president of the Christian Union at a time when the charismatic renewal was rolling around England, and the Christian Union exploded, and we had all these new Christians, and we hadn't a clue what we were doing, and we had to rely on God's Holy Spirit a good deal to get through. But it was an extraordinary, exciting time, and of course, it was there at Portsmouth where a young woman came to faith in the first term I was there. And I ended up marrying her. I ended up marrying Mary, who was on my course. And that was a lovely story.
Okay, well, I just want to back up a little bit. And there's kind of a contrast. I mean, you were involved in the charismatic movement and emotions and feelings about your faith. But yet, on the other hand, you're very much into the hard sciences of biology. So it's kind of a contrast between feelings and emotion and facts and data and figures. Can you kind of reconcile those two?
Yes, that's a very good question, Eric, and I'm often asked it, and I must confess to being slightly bewildered by it.
Is that right?
Because my life, you know, living in odd corners of the world as I did, really, one of the fruits of that, apart from being totally disconnected with any one place, was an intense curiosity with life, And, of course, both science and theology are both quests for truth.
Mm-hmm.
And both, of course, have their origin in God. And so scientific truth and theological truth, because they both originate in God, they cannot war against each other. Mm-hmm. They just answer different questions. So science answers the question, how?
Mm-hmm.
And theology answers the question, why?
Mm-hmm.
And so the two dance together beautifully.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a case that to be a Christian you've got to kiss your brains goodbye and mm-hmm. believe six impossible things before breakfast. No. You know, as an apologist, I can say that, you know, being a Christian is entirely rational. It is scientifically reasonable. It is historically reasonable. It is morally reasonable, and it's experientially reasonable. So I've never found any discontinuity between my life as a scientist and my life as a theologian.
Mm-hmm.
And many Christian scientists, actually many more scientists than people realize, are Christians. Francis Collins, who headed up the genome project, whereby the, you know, which mapped the genetic code mm-hmm. of human beings,
yep.
a fabulous international project. He himself says that when he does science, he feels that to be an act of worship.
Mm-hmm.
And he is a lovely, committed Christian. Mm.
So the Lord obviously has wired you in such a way that science and biology was something that really interested you.
It does. I mean, I love science. And one of the most intriguing things about science is why on earth we can do it. I mean, why is it that we have the intellect at exactly the right level to unlock the secrets of the universe?
Mm.
And why are there so many beautiful codes in the universe so that it leaves even atheistic scientists saying God was a mathematician of a very high order.
Mm.
And we see this extraordinary, outrageous order of the universe. I mean, just to give you an example, the universe essentially is built by four special forces: the nuclear force, weak nuclear force, strong nuclear force, electromagnetic force, and the gravitational force. Well, if the ratio of those two of those forces, the gravitational force and the electromagnetic force, had varied by as much as 1/10,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000, that demands an explanation. You just can't shrug your shoulders lazily and say, well, we're here because we're here. I mean, that is an intellectually lazy and inadequate response to the miracle of existence. And so science has something to say about theology, and theology can frame science and say, well, this is why. And so I love dancing between the two disciplines. Mm.
I guess I've heard the phrase, the fine-tuning of the universe.
That's
so it's
exactly
very
right.
fine-tuned. And why is it that way? Well, it makes perfect sense if there is a creator and a designer who made it that way.
That's exactly right, Eric. Spot on. And these are great questions. I mean, when I talk with an atheist, they quite often say, oh, I'm a rationalist. Not really. Do tell me about the cosmos and where it came from. And the jaw drops a bit. And then I say, if you are telling me that the universe came from nothing as a result of nothing via a mechanism that has never been discovered and which undermines the laws of cause and effect which underpin all of science, you are not being rational. I mean, when we see extraordinary, outrageous order, you know, such as a protein molecule, which, interestingly enough, are no longer called molecules. It's actually more accurate to call them machines. Some of the proteins are extraordinarily complex. Some operate like electric motors. They're extraordinary. The chance of building one of a protein by chance led to one of the atheistic physicists, English atheistic physicist Fred Hoyle, saying it's about as likely as a tornado going through a junkyard building a 747 jet.
Oh, wow.
And someone worked out the likelihood of it happening by chance. And I think they likened it to pulling the handle of a one-armed bandit, a gambling machine, and you'd have to pull the handle more times than there were atoms in the universe to have a chance of building even a moderate-sized.
I guess if I'm following you, it's kind of like God's fingerprints of design are all over creation, and specifically even in a little molecule.
Absolutely.
Okay, well, we need to get back to your story. Now, we kind of passed up the fact that you got married to your best friend, Mary.
I did indeed, and produced two children, one born in England, Michael, my son, and my daughter, Katie. Mm-hmm. My son is now a policeman up in the mid-north of South Australia. Katie is an assistant pastor of a local church, and it's really a church which I now attend because I've now retired from being a pastor, although I continue to write books. And it's really rather odd being in a church, watching your daughter as your pastor.
Oh, wow.
It's a very good feeling.
Today we're chatting with author and retired pastor, Dr. Nick Hawks. And as we've been hearing, he loves to defend the Christian faith and talk about apologetics. We're going to take a break, and when we return, we'll hear more of his life story, including about the numerous books he's authored and also about his current battle with cancer. All that and more when we return right here on Real Faith.
Looking for resources to grow your faith? Check out Vision Christian Store with books, movies, audio CDs, DVD resources and more. Plus, free delivery on orders over $50. See visionstore.org.au.
You're listening to Real Faith, conversations with real people about how God works in their lives. If you want to know more about integrating faith into your life, our website is realfaith.org.au. Just go to the website and you'll find helpful articles about the impact faith can have on your life. Once again, that's realfaith.org.au.
Welcome back. I'm Eric Scadable, and today, once again, we're talking with author and retired pastor, Dr. Nick Hawks. He's been sharing with us his life story, including about how he became a Christian with his twin brother, Tim, in England, then about his time doing ministry work in Hong Kong. Now we're going to find out the rest of Dr. Nick Hawks' story. So then you eventually returned to Australia from the UK?
Yes, I did. I did research work in England. I worked for a multinational chemical company investigating ways of controlling pests and diseases of crops. And that was great fun. I really enjoyed that. And then moved back to Australia working for the same company, originally beginning in pretty much the outback of Australia, in the Australian Mallee on the banks of the River Murray. Mm-hmm. And then a drought came and burnt up all my research work in the field.
Oh, wow.
And so I took over research in South Australia, being based in Adelaide.
Mm-hmm.
And whilst there in Adelaide, got very much involved in youth ministry, which was an exciting time.
And then a major change in your life, being called to be a minister.
Yes. Mary and I had been asked to start a youth group. And we thought, wow. So we began with seven. It went down to three. And we thought, my golly, we're marvelously gifted at this. Not. And then it went to 110.
Oh, wow.
And we thought, my goodness. And so I knew that I actually had to make a choice. You know, I had to spend my time either, you know, pastoring people and leading people to faith or science. And so I felt the call of God to go into ministry. And I trained with the Uniting Church and went to quite a liberal theological college in the Uniting Church, which either kills your faith or strengthens it.
Yeah.
And luckily for me, it turned me into an apologist, and I had to learn good reasons why I believed in conventional Christianity as opposed to liberal revisionism that wanted to change everything. And it was a fairly stormy time, and it remained a stormy time, you know, for the 10 years that I was a pastor.
And then eventually you left the Uniting Church?
Yes, that's right. I went into Country Parish down at Keith, Tindinara, and then in Adelaide, but felt that in the end that the culture of the Uniting Church was so constricting and stopping us from doing the things we wanted to do that we left. And this is not an easy thing to do because Christians are all about unity, not disunity. Mm. And there's a lot of tears and sadness in that. Left the Uniting Church and planted a non-denominational new church, which we called Rivergate. It's a wonderful community, Rivergate Christian Community. And we squatted like cuckoos in other people's nests. So we had church in school halls, and which meant, of course, we were able to do extraordinary things with our finances. And so we very much got involved with missions work in India. Mm-hmm. And were able to give sacrificially to that mm-hmm. in a way we couldn't have done if we had to pay for our own building and staff and goodness knows what. And so that was very, very exciting. And I retired from there in 2018. And so since that time, I have been engaged in an interesting battle with cancer, which has been both a challenge and a blessing.
Mm. Yes,
and also writing books.
Yeah, that's what we wanted to talk about. Before we get to your current battle with cancer, you, while you were a pastor, at the same time, you felt led to get involved in writing books, but not just theological books, nonfiction as well. Tell us about your writing.
Yes, it began by writing resources for the church. Mm-hmm. I was asked by an organization in India to write a summary of the Bible, mm-hmm. and helping people through the tricky bits. And so I did that and then wrote a few more for them as they asked for them, and they got translated into Hindi and going around India now in huge numbers.
Wow.
But I also wrote about the scientific credibility of Christianity, because so many people were feeling challenged by this radical, strident new atheism, which was saying that Christianity was not in any way academically defensible. And and of course, it's absolute rubbish.
Yeah,
and so I wrote a number of books in that area. But also, I probably like you, Eric, I just love stories.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And I was saddened by the fact that I couldn't really find really good quality Christian novels that had mystery, adventure, that were clever, that were that included within it interesting reflections on the possibility of faith, but they didn't preach at you. They, you know, you could give them to your non-Christian friends and know that they weren't being got at. And so I decided to write novels, write the stories that I would like to read myself. And so that one gave way to two, three, and so the Stone collection became written. All my novels have the word stone in them.
Yeah, why is that?
Really just to tie them together. Mm. I mean, every novel has different characters and different places and different adventures, but I just needed something to tie them together into a family, into a collection, so that people would say, well, have you read the other one in that collection? And what you do is you use the sales of an earlier novel to help point to the next one. And so the Celtic stone gave way to the Viking stone, which gave way to the Pharaoh stone, which gave way to the Fire stone, and it goes on to the Peacock stone and the Dragon stone. The Dragon stone was the one I've just finished, and that is based, guess what, in Hong Kong in 1972,
oh, wow.
where I was working with Jackie Pullinger in the Walled City at that time. So all that experience comes pouring out in the next, or my last novel.
Mm. Wow, so the Lord led you to quite a variety of books that you have written, both in nonfiction and Christian apologetics, defending the faith, and a summary of the Bible, but then also, as you just mentioned, some good storytelling and novels and fiction.
Yes, I like to think that I'm following Jesus' example. I mean, Jesus spent an awful lot of time telling stories, didn't
exactly.
he?
Exactly. You
know, parables.
Love it.
And it just puts faith in the context of everyday experience,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I love that. And in a novel, you are able to take a hero who's deeply flawed and broken in some way, whether it's by grief, despair, or shame, and then journey with that person as they discover hope and do that in the context of a wonderful adventure and mystery.
Mm. Oh, you have me curious. I'm going to have to look up your books now.
Tell me what you think.
Yeah, that sounds good. Oh, that's something I'll have to explore. But sadly, we need to end our conversation talking about your current battle. I chatted with you yesterday. We were talking about maybe recording yesterday, but if we did, you would have been chatting and doing this interview while getting chemo treatment. Is that right?
That's right. Yes, I'm currently going toe to toe with death in battling cancer, stage four cancer, and that has been a 3-year battle, and it has had its challenges. It can be pretty grim, but also its rewards. In many ways, cancer has rescued me from myself. And
oh wow! What do you mean by that?
Well, it means that it focuses you very much on the things that are truly important. Mm. So things like ego and money just become absurd and irrelevant.
Yeah.
You find that you are more passionate about the purposes of God. I find that I cry more readily and I laugh more readily. I find that I am passionate about the things of God, and that I realize that my time on planet Earth is limited, and so I don't want to regret a single thing that I've left undone, that I want to write and record as much as I can for radio, that I want to write as much as I can and have the privilege of speaking to other people's lives and whispering the dangerous possibility of God to them as well as I possibly can while I can. And very much looking forward to, you know, to finishing well as I can, and hearing God say, "Well done, Nick, good and faithful servant." And so the passion for making God's glory known in my time burns incredibly uncomfortably within me, and I'm just seeking to make the most of it in what I'm doing.
Now, you were diagnosed with stage 4 cancer in 2016, and it's been kind of a roller coaster ride since then. Can you share with
us
some of the ups and downs?
Ups and downs, that's right. I was put on a fairly broad spectrum chemo and radiation, which was not expected to have any effect on the cancer other than slow it down, give me more time on the planet. But remarkably, it killed it all off.
Wow.
And so my non-Christian doctor was forced to use the term miracle, which made me laugh. Absolutely wonderful.
Yeah.
And for 16 months, I was cancer-free. But as often happens with cancer, it came roaring back. And it came roaring back all the way through the liver and the spine and lungs and other places. And I was on palliative care and just weeks away from dying.
Yeah, I mean, palliative care is usually when they've given up hope.
Yes,
and they're just making you comfortable before it all comes to an end.
That's right. That was the language, Nick.
Yeah.
Just keep you comfortable now until
yeah.
you die. But at the last moment, I was invited to participate in a trial with a new experimental immunosuppressant chemo drug. And I've been on this trial, and of all the people on the trial, I've had the best response.
Is that right?
And so this cancer, again, the second time, has either disappeared or almost disappeared. Now, the sad part is that all the radiation and the chemo treatment has left my body very weak and all my joints inflamed, so it's quite uncomfortable, but I can live with that.
Yeah.
And so it may yet be that I have more time on this planet to show God's truth and grace. And so I'm making the most of it.
Well, yeah, it sounds like you're still writing, and you're obviously still able to chat with us here today, and you still do your radio spots as well.
I find the privilege of that, Eric, absolutely extraordinary. I mean, fancy being given the privilege to speak to a whole bunch of people on radio about the love and the truth of God, and do that in just a pithy few minutes. And I found that absolutely wonderful. I'll tell you how I learned to do that, by the way.
How was that?
In the days when I was running a youth group, we ran a drop-in center where the local hoods in town turned up down at Keith, and they allowed me to preach for 60 seconds while standing on a chair. And so I got really good at sharing something. I'd pick a line from a rock song, speaking about something that was relevant to their lives, and then I'd bring in the gospel, issue a challenge, and that was done in 60 seconds.
Wow.
It was perfect training for radio.
Wow.
And so there you are. It was fun.
Well, before we let you go today, any final concluding comments that you'd like to leave our listeners with?
Yes, certainly. Life is an extraordinary gift, an amazing miracle. You are much more sacred than you can possibly believe. God has a purpose for you. The greatest adventure of life is uncovering that purpose, discovering the love of God, and living the adventure that he invites you into, an adventure that continues beyond this life, for you are designed to live forever. Don't miss out on it. I think that's probably what I'd say.
And I think that was about 60 seconds. Thank you so much.
It's been lovely speaking with you.
Thank you so much, Dr. Nick Hawks, for sharing the wonderful ways that God has worked in your life and the novels and all the things you're doing, the radio spots, all that and more. You can learn about it at his website, nickhawks.net. That's nickhawks.net. Thank you once again, Dr. Nick Hawks, for joining us today.
Absolute privilege. God bless you.
You've been listening to Real Faith, and if you have any questions or comments, you can send us a message through our website, realfaith.org.au. That's realfaith.org.au. Thanks for listening, and we invite you to join us again next time for more conversations about God working in the lives of people who put their faith and trust in Him. That's real people, real life, and real faith.
This program is a production of Vision Christian Media. To find out more about us, see vision.org.au.